Hello and welcome to the FinTech Newscast. My name's John, and this week we'll be doing a news roundup to try to capture a lot of things that are going on in the world these days, mostly brought to you by the coronavirus. Please hit subscribe to keep up with these and the latest in FinTech news. All right, it seems like the world has changed so much lately, and here to go through some of the changes with me is Steve.
Hey, John. Good to hear from you. How are you?
Hey, good, good. Haven't seen you in weeks, which I guess it's a blessing and a curse.
Let's keep it that way, huh?
Yeah, sure. There's been so many things and that have been going on, so many changes in the environment, and some of them, I mean, you just don't have time to think through all the different effects that this coronavirus quarantining might, and especially since it's all over the world.
Yeah, the news is coming out hard and fast. It's a never-ending stream of changes and updates and companies going under, whole industries and sectors being taken down. I'm thinking here of travel, of course.
Yep, just saw that Airbnb had their valuation cut in half, down to $18 billion, which is still huge, maybe cut some of the fat out of there, but getting hit, of course, directly by coronavirus and the shelter-in-place orders.
That's a really good point. I'm sure that if the ride-hailing companies like Uber and Lyft were actually still private, they would have also taken a massive, massive hit to the valuation, right? And interestingly, I also saw that both Airbnb and Slack are raised funds, rather, to cover, to weather the crisis financially until this thing hopefully blows over in 1 or 2 months or so. And the terms at which both companies borrowed money were very, very different. So the Slack terms were essentially, you know, almost a zero interest loan because everyone's now using Slack and really understanding the usefulness of having that channel to communicate remotely. On the other hand, though, the Airbnb loan had some fairly onerous terms, I think. They essentially had to sell their shares to their investors at half the price. And I think they had an interest rate above 5% or so. So really high, given sort of the economic context that we're in pre-coronavirus, but really a sign that investors may be losing confidence in this business model, especially now in light of this stuff.
Yeah, definitely a tale of two cities, Slack becoming more useful and Airbnb sure to have a lot less business in the next at least few months.
Right. We'll see how that plays out. Yeah.
Another interesting thing I saw was, Watson, the IBM intelligent assistance device, which you always have to mention. It's the Jeopardy champion, Watson. I always see that in every article.
Of course.
Their chatbot is being used to help you determine your symptoms for coronavirus.
Oh, fascinating. I'm really interested in how all these companies are using their technology to diagnose people. I know that Apple also released something similar, it's probably last week, but it feels like a month ago.
Yeah.
Because that's how time travels out.
It's like an app where you go through your symptom?
I think so. I think it's an iOS app, and you can essentially give it what you have. And then if you are considered to be maybe high risk or so, it'll point you to a local testing site. I think that's the case. Which, by the way, is a different app than what Trump had touted by Google maybe 3 weeks ago or so, or a year ago, who knows, somewhere in the past.
Because this one actually exists, right?
I think this one's actually up and running, and it again is based on your symptoms, and then it'll give you sort of a likelihood with, as whether you have the bug or not. Pretty interesting.
Yeah, and unfortunately, there's some negative aspects to all this as well. One of the warnings that we got, I saw from the regulators was against insider trading. There's so many more people exposed to key things that a company can be doing. If they see that a supplier is having trouble, if they know that the people are going to get laid off at their company, this can, of course, affect share prices and before these things are publicly announced. So there's so much more opportunity for insider trading that the SEC and all the regulators, I think, will be taking a close look at this.
Right. I think those rules apply, though. Those rules apply, though, unless you're an elected official.
Right. Yeah. There were some Congress people, right, who, of course, were leading the way in corruption, who traded after getting an intelligence report on the effects of coronavirus. I didn't know it would be wrong. I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Who knew? Yeah. Although apparently it's not illegal. It's not illegal to use an information you glean in the course of your duties as an elected official to actually trade in your stock. So
yeah, it just looks really bad. It's morally questionable and something that I'm sure your opponents can beat you over the head with in the next election.
And I'm sure they will.
Yeah, and of course, there's all the scams we've all seen about the coronavirus cures or investment opportunities or whatever. But I just saw something saying that college-educated investors are more likely to fall for coronavirus scams. There's always hubris and pride involved, and that's kind of related to what they were talking about. They're saying that if somebody's familiar with tech, that the scammers will target them for tech-related type of scams or investment opportunities. Since they'll feel more comfortable with that kind of industry, they're more likely to invest and more likely to fall for that kind of investment scam or whatever it is.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, no education can get you away from human foibles.
Isn't there also a correlation between college education and being an anti-vaxxer as well?
Yeah, right. And yeah, we can see the effects of coronavirus directly in fintech as well.
We can, yeah. One of the really hearting stories that I've seen is a trend, is the way in which fintechs have really come together to address some of the needs of their customers, whether they be consumers or small and medium businesses. In the case of Plaid, they recently announced that they are looking to apply some of their data analytics and data gathering capabilities to essentially help banks process all these PPP loans for small and medium businesses so that essentially they can gather and analyze and also disseminate payroll and HR and cash flow data to help the big lending institutions like the big banks be able to, again, make loans to those who need it the most.
Oh, right. So they'll facilitate the data that you need. Yeah, I know you have to show some employment information, meaning the 941 forms showing the taxes that you pay when you employ people. And I think you have to show some income history as well. So they'll help gather that information, kind of automate that for you if you're a customer of theirs.
They will, yeah. So according to their press release, a process like this would take a bank usually between a matter of weeks, say 3 to 4 weeks or so, to process all the data and then actually disperse the loan and the funds. But if you go through the Plaid solution, they can gather all this information within basically a matter of minutes. So really shortening that life cycle so that, again, the businesses who are hurting the most can get access to funds much more quickly.
Oh, so they're working with the lender. So the lender will accept that data and then just kind of cut off that whole thing, accept it as valid and move forward quickly.
Exactly. Yeah. They claim in the press release that they're working with 100 lenders, and those could be banks or non-banks. So they mentioned actually Square and companies like Gusto as well as just all the big banks in the US.
Huh. Interesting. Yeah. That is helpful.
Yeah. And there's also some really interesting stuff going on in the consumer fintech space. So Starling Bank, which is, you know, again, a neobank based in the UK, has released a product they can essentially, for their customers who may be vulnerable, whether because they're old or they have some sort of underlying health conditions, they can issue a card for those that would help them get groceries. So that if, for example, if you, John, are, say, you know, if you have a heart condition or if you're elderly, you can issue me a card so that I can make a card press and purchase, so a physical purchase at a grocery store and then bring you back the groceries.
It's like just an electronic card?
It's both. It's a physical card as well as an electronic card.
Okay, so they can just set some small limit on it and say, okay, here's the $30 for some groceries. Here, take my card and take care of this for me and help me out.
Yeah, they actually have a limit that's a bit higher. It's about £200 because it's in the UK. Uh-huh. And I think the users can even control where the money is spent. So that if I give, you know, Timmy down the street my card, he won't go to GameStop or whatever. I don't think that's open. Yeah. But he kind of a bad analogy there.
Boy, it's just sad these days, isn't it?
Yeah. I know it's all closed. I almost sent Timmy in the comic book shop. That's also closed. But Timmy can only go to the store that I choose and spend also.
Or he blows it on toilet paper somewhere.
Exactly.
There's a real life current example. Yeah, that's really helpful. I could see that, you know, when somebody would need that. And since elder financial abuse has been such a concern and a rising problem, this is a good way to kind of clamp down on that.
It's a massive issue. Yeah. Staying with the within the neobank space, I think the impetus for this predates the coronavirus crisis or pandemic. Mm-hmm. But Monzo will actually shutter its customer support office in Las Vegas, and they're going to lay off about 165 employees.
Wow, that is that place is getting hit really hard. I mean, all the employment is dead in Las Vegas, and they're losing Monzo too, huh?
They are. So they claim that this is actually a contact center that only services customers in the UK, but they really have had a hard time actually breaking into the US market, apparently. So
yeah, that's interesting that they have a contact center in Las Vegas to support people within the UK.
It is. I wonder if they have to fake either a Welsh or a Scottish accent. We'll see.
Yeah, I know people fake their American accents, or at least they try to when they call me.
Or their names, right?
Yeah, I wonder if they get a lot of calls with people using fake names like Liam, Nigel, or Basil calling from Las Vegas so that they feel more comfortable.
I really hope they do. The one silver lining here is actually that employees who are being let go will get 2 months full pay and healthcare. So at least this will carry them through the summer.
Yeah. Hopefully that's long enough. I mean, we joke, but yeah, these are really painful things for people.
They are.
Yeah. And hopefully that's enough for them to buy those essentials that they need.
And speaking of essentials, there's a new report that came out that listed, as we all knew, there's been really a spike in purchases at grocery stores.
Hoarding, but sure.
Some hoarding. Yeah, absolutely. But it gets a little more complicated. So they mentioned that essentially on the day that the national lockdown was announced on March 13, card transactions went up by 30%, which is amazing.
Wow. Yeah, there's a huge purchases going on at that time. But once you hoard, you don't have to buy again, do you?
You don't. So there's a couple of really interesting data points here. The first one is that, again, transactions went up in volume by 30%, but also the average purchase went up to $75.
Yeah.
Which is, it's typically about 45 or so, 50 bucks. So again, kind of a nice increase. But we also saw, according to this report, how about 2.5 weeks into the national lockdown, we saw a gradual decline as well. So I think that stuff is normalizing, which is great.
Hopefully that's not an indication that there's people are running out of money as well, but that they're eating through all their canned soups.
That's the idea. The other data point also is that this is pretty interesting, but gasoline purchases have been steady and actually have been declining, which makes a lot of sense as well, right? Everyone's driving less. And also gas is so much cheaper now, right?
I was listening to the Mark Maron podcast, and he said this is the first time he hasn't bought gas. He lives in LA, and he hasn't bought gas in 3 weeks, and it's the first time since he's lived there.
It's a great time to drive. If only you had somewhere to go.
So that's a hit all the way down the line, from the retailer to the distributor to the suppliers. Even the people who process the credit cards all have declining revenue.
They would, although not if you're Galileo. So Galileo is a company that's based in Boston. They're essentially a payment processor and an issuing company. And they were just acquired by SoFi for $1.2 billion in the middle of this crazy pandemic.
Yeah, I guess that it's some really great news for the shareholders of Galileo, but really an unfortunate time to receive it. But what does this purchase mean for SoFi? I thought they were just doing, you know, kind of consolidation loans and initially anyways focused on the student lending side, right?
I think that was their initial play maybe 5-7 years ago, but now they've actually expanded. They offer all kinds of solutions from a checking account to, I believe, home mortgages, personal loans. They really have broadened their portfolio significantly.
So part of the rebundling that we see among fintechs.
Exactly. They're basically rebundling. And interestingly enough, actually, Galileo, which by the way is based in Salt Lake City, not in Boston, they actually work with many of SoFi's competitors, like the aforementioned Monzo, as well as Chime, Robinhood, TransferWise, Vero Money, and essentially all the big players in the space. And they're actually bigger in the UK than they are in the US. But they essentially provide a card issuance platform so that, again, you can issue your cards, either electronically or physically. You can do payments. You can sort of move money around much more quickly and more effectively than without. So I think the thinking here is that this will help SoFi kind of get into even more products and more channels to distribute their services.
Okay. It really helps to round out all of SoFi's products and maybe improves the value proposition for some of them.
I believe that's the case. Yeah.
Well, hopefully some of this $1.2 billion goes to charity and helping out, like Jack Dorsey I just read about.
Yes, this is pretty amazing, actually. He pledged to give away $1 billion, mostly in Square equity. Not Twitter equity, which is pretty interesting, to help aid the relief efforts to combat the effects of COVID-19 here.
What kind of aid is it?
So it'll begin, it's actually doing, you know, this is kind of a pet cost within the Valley, but people out here really like the concept of a universal basic income. So I think they're actually going to do direct cash transfers to people who might have been affected by this. But they also, this has a lot of interesting components. The first one is that it'll be extremely transparent. So they actually will see who's getting the money and how is it being distributed. And the other piece is that this will actually be used to fund or support other causes beyond COVID-19 relief as well. So in the press release, they mentioned that this may focus on things like health and education for girls, as well as, of course, the aforementioned UBI, but also it could just be a fund to just help all these other societal ills after this crisis is over.
Oh, so looking at other issues where they can help out. Well, with $1 billion, I guess you can spread it out a little bit and still have a big impact. We'll give a gold star to Jack Dorsey and hope more billionaires follow in his footsteps.
That would be ideal. Hello, Jeff Bezos.
Yeah. Can he pronounce charity, you think? Would he be like a chair? What is that word?
How do you pronounce that? Yeah.
Yeah.
Good question.
And a lot of these companies are doing it, we mentioned earlier, through the business themselves.
Yes, actually. And they're not the only ones. I have actually a really cool rundown here from Forbes that details what smaller fintechs are doing to help customers who are going through the crisis now as well. So
all right,
the first one. Yeah. So the first one is Fresh EBT. Fresh EBT is an app that essentially gets you to receive your SNAP benefits. That's what used to be called food stamps, right? So you can spend them. And okay. They're partnered with an organization in New York called Give Directly, which will just give money through that platform to SNAP recipients. So if you're actually part of the extremely poor cohort, you can receive a one-time cash payment by being a user of Fresh EBT.
Oh, okay. So they're using that platform to give additional funds to people in need.
Correct. And the article here, a lady received, I believe, $1,000, which is an amazing gift to have when you actually, first of all, when you're already dire enough that you need food stamps. And then secondly, in the middle of a crisis, when maybe your job is affected, just it seems like a godsend. The second one is also Even. We know Even, they provide a cash flow smoothing application where they can upfront your paycheck so that you can cover your expenses and kind of give you a more consistent paycheck experience. And they're used by Walmart. I think something like 50,000 Walmart employees use Even, and Even, it's a massive, actually, no, it's 500,000 employees use Even.
Oh, that's, let me increase my O. Oh,
it's a much goodness. Bigger O. Yeah,
500,000. Yeah, that's huge.
It's huge. And users typically pay Even $4 a month, and they're now going to waive those fees for the foreseeable. Again, an amazing thing to do.
So $2 million a month in revenue that they're giving up, which for, you know, not a huge company, is a really big deal.
It is. But it also buys you amazing PR. So
very expensive PR, but yeah, we're glad they're doing that. That's every bit helps.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. The other is Saver Life, which is to be Earn. And what they're doing is that they're having a contest where if you're able to save $100, they will give you $100 as well. So a one-for-one match, NPR style.
Okay, yeah, matching funds.
Right. Matching funds.
If you call in within the next hour.
That's right. And then, of course, we know Chime. We know one of our favorites here in the FinTech Newscast. And they are going to advance most of their users, if they qualify, up to $1,200, which is part of their stimulus check as well, before they get it.
Okay. Yes. Okay. So shorten the time frame. So a short-term loan.
Correct. So it's only going to be
with rent, and actually, a lot of people aren't even paying their rent. Which, if you're running out of money for food and medicine and essentials, then yeah, that's actually a big deal.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. The other play is from Cabbage, which is more based on the SMB space. So they are creating a program where you can buy a gift card to your local shop. There's a lot of efforts around sort of helping your local merchants stay afloat, right? There's Save Our Faves in the Bay Area. There's other things of that sort as well in the East Coast and in Europe.
Oh, so you buy the gift card so the restaurant can get the money now and pay back later in services.
Correct. Yeah. Goods. So Cabbage is a lender to SMBs. And what they're doing is that they're also allowing SMBs to sell gift cards to their customers locally. and they claim to have done up to, I think, $60,000 so far in gift card purchases.
Restaurants really do need the help. I see every day, it seems like, in the local paper, a list of restaurants that are going out of business permanently, not just for a little while.
And the two last ones here is also Square, of course, through their Cash App, is also going to be a funnel through which the government can also distribute all these funds to people who need them. So that if you know that you're in line to get a check from the government, Square will just upfront you the cash, and then it'll be a no interest loan until the money comes through, maybe in 3 to 4 weeks or so. And the very last one is actually Acorns. Acorns is very much focused on financial health. And what they're doing is that they are putting out a lot of the advice, the newsletter. They can give you even a calculator all for free, even if you're not a user, so that you can, again, get a better sense of your finances and understand what's coming to you, what's coming in, what's going out during this gigantic crisis.
So a newsletter, some advice, how to make soup with actual acorns.
Yeah, maybe in the works.
Some advice, yeah. What to do with those extra cans of tomato paste in the back of your pantry. Okay, so Acorns is giving some advice. Yeah, we can always use a good reminder. Okay, great. It's great to see that fintechs and companies across the country are doing what they can to help out during this crisis. You know, one of the effects that's going to have a lot of downstream impacts is people not paying rent, whether it's for where they live or storefronts. Like I said, restaurants have been hit so hard, but all those downstream rental payments aren't being made either. So we're going to see a lot of widespread impact from this. So all these little bits from so many different players hopefully add up to really help people.
They do. Although I got to say, just a quick shout out here to my, I have a friend who's a lawyer in New York, a partner at a law firm. He shall remain unnamed here. And he's actually fretting about the fact that because of the fact that lawyers can now work from home, and a lot of what they have to pay for is this very expensive real estate in Midtown Manhattan, right? Which they pass on to their customers and, you know, by charging super high fees. They're wondering whether customers may revolt and say, why am I paying you, you know, a few hundred bucks an hour to pay for your fancy office when you obviously can do this from home when this goes back to normal? So we may see second order and third order effects of this as well throughout the year, not just for consumers, but also maybe in the way in which we do business. So consulting companies, law firms, right? All the professional services, all the people in the professional services space may see also a lot of changes in this as well.
Yeah. It's not clear what all the long-term effects will be, what's going to stick around. But according to Anthony Fauci, we should get rid of handshakes and we should all be washing our hands much more, which is two things he hoped that would come out of this in the long
term. Two things I can also get behind, by the way.
Yeah. Well, I look forward to elbow bumping you.
Yes.
Next time I see you, sometime in July, maybe.
Yep. Sounds good.
All right. Hopefully you're staying safe and financially savvy out there while we go through this crisis. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Stay safe and savvy.